This is MMA Torch editor Jamie Pennock, and this is the Torch audio update for Friday, February 13th, 2009. I'm joined today by Torch columnist Matt Pelkey for a look at a couple of the big stories that have come out of the last week and a half post UFC 94. First off, we had Fight Night 17 last week, Matt. Had some really good free action after a long stretch of pay-per-views. Before we get into our other two main topics of the night, what was your overall thoughts on the Fight Night 17 telecast and the six fights that came out?
It was a really good fight night. It's not loaded up with A-level fighters who are positioning for titles or anything like that, but that's not what fight nights are for. They're for, showcasing the up-and-comers and getting everybody a chance to, get their name in the bright light. So it was a really good event. We saw no real classic four-star fights or anything like that, but two really good two-round fights in the Josh Neer, Mac Danzig, and Joe Lozon, Jeremy Stevens fights, and a nice little, one full-round scrap between Matt Greece and Matt Veach, and a little sloppy, and they kind of gassed out a little bit, but that's what you get when you got guys deep in the undercard, but they came to fight, and that's all that really matters. I just thought it was a really enjoyable 2 hours. I don't expect too much from Ultimate Fight Night, so when they deliver it, kind of increases my enjoyment that much more. So this is just another good example to stick in the library of good Ultimate Fight Nights.
Well, and especially so when you've got so many pay-per-view dollars going towards events in January. To have a free show like this that supplements the two UFC shows with, six more fights that weren't seen on those two cards, especially with UFC 94 kind of disappointing some people with the fact that it was almost all decisions. We get six fights here in the 2 hours, so that's always nice to see. Plus, Joe Lozon put on a clinic on the ground against Jeremy Stevens. Granted, it was partly because it was against Jeremy Stevens, who doesn't have the best ground game to defend against someone the caliber of Lozon. But, Lozon's definitely on that short list of people in the lightweight division in the UFC right now that is definitely nearing the top of the peak to get a crack at BJ Penn or Kenny Florian, whoever comes out of that fight alive. And speaking of BJ Penn, the biggest hoopla that's come out of UFC 94 has been this controversy over whether or not George St. Pierre is greasing himself for his fights, if his trainers are doing this deliberately, or if it's a common theme, as has been suggested by some. The situation is as such. His trainer, Phil Nurse, with the Vaseline on his left hand, used his right fingertips to spread it onto George St. Pierre's forehead and face, as is allowed. Then also used his left fingertips to continue rubbing the rest of it into his face, and then made a mistake and did George St. Pierre's little breathing technique that they do where he rubs his chest and his shoulders and the back part of his back between his shoulder blades. If anything got onto George St. Pierre here, it was a minuscule amount, nothing that would have made the least bit of difference in this fight, despite what everyone is going off about. And we've got people coming out of the woodwork now, Matt, trying to say, oh, he felt greasy in this fight, he felt greasy in this fight. Really, the way this has come off to me is someone looking for an excuse because they can't accept the fact that they lost. And the fact that so many fighters are coming out after the fact is more along the lines of people looking for an excuse rather than give credit to the fact that George St. Pierre is just about better than everyone on the planet right now, at least anyone near his weight right now. I honestly think if him and Anderson Silva fight, I it's closer to even than it is one-sided in anyone's favor. So I really, this whole controversy, I know I'm not in the minority. We had our poll on the main site, and over 70% of the people that voted in that poll are in the same line, thinking this is a lot being made about nothing. There is definitely a vocal part of the MMA community that is behind BJ Penn and calling out George St. Pierre as a cheater and really trying to tarnish what was the biggest win of his career. Matt, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this whole situation and where you're weighing in on this, because I really honestly think that it's a whole lot of nothing being made out of a little mistake, and it didn't have the least bit to do with the fact that BJ Penn got his ass kicked.
Yeah, it's much ado about nothing. As far as this specific example goes, if I'm not mistaken, didn't they towel him off when they noticed it was going on before he even got back to fight the next round? So it just doesn't seem like, even if they were trying to cheat, they didn't even get the opportunity to follow through with their plan because it was, you know, thwarted by the athletic commission because they saw it happen. So, you know, I just feel like this is BJ just kind of grasping for anything that he can, and it's kind of disappointing because I'm such a big BJ Penn fan to see something like that. But the real concern now to me is that it seems like through all this, you know, maelstrom of controversy has come out the idea that it's not entirely uncommon for fighters to, you know, soak themselves in a warm bath of water and baby oil so it soaks up into their skin and then, you know, seeps out once they start sweating. That, to me, if that's a common thing that fighters are doing, that's a big deal. That could be like, you know, baseball's HGH because it's undetectable, basically, until you actually get into the fight situation. So that could be something that needs to be looked at a little closer in the future. But as far as this goes, I just don't see it. There was nothing, you know, unless George St. Pierre was putting cement in his gloves or something like that. There's no amount of cheating that he needed on that night to beat BJ Penn, because he took him down at will. He pounded him and pounded him and pounded him, you know, multiple 10-8 rounds in that fight. He was just a better fighter, and that's all there was to it. I think if we just ignore this, maybe it'll just go away. So I'm going to start doing that. And we can move on to great fights with BJ Penn and Kenny Florian and GSP and Thiago Alves. Those are two fantastic fights to look forward to. So let's put this fight behind us. It was the latest and greatest, biggest fight in UFC history. And in one way or another, it lived up to the hype. So let's just enjoy it at that and move on.
And unfortunately, it's not going to end soon, as BJ Penn did send a letter to the Nevada State Athletic Commission asking for a formal investigation into the coroner and what happened in the fight. He didn't make it a formal complaint trying to get the outcome overturned, which wouldn't have happened at all regardless of anything that they might find, quote unquote, but they're going to be looking into it, and I'm very interested to see what exactly they say comes out of this. They did wipe St. Pierre down after the second round and after the third round. A lot of the complaints are coming from the fact that he wasn't wiped down after the first round, before the second round, and the claims have been that that's where BJ was unable to use his strengths, his jiu-jitsu, to fend off George St. Pierre. But when you look at some of the highlights from that second round, BJ's legs are slipping off of the shoulder blades where St. Pierre was not rubbed down, off of different areas where he wasn't able to hold the guard because George St. Pierre is a much stronger guy. He had 25 pounds on BJ that night, or not 25, but at least 15, if not more, more than that, on BJ that night. And he's a much stronger fighter, and he's a much better fighter than he was when they faced 2 years ago. And it was just made very evident. So the fact that this is going to continue is kind of sad, and it would be nice if we could just move on. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Probably not. It's probably going to drag on for a while until we actually get the athletic commission to issue whatever statement they're going to make. And then, you know, BJ will keep talking about it for a while, but it's not going to go away until they each have their next fights. And so that's probably not till, you know, June, July, maybe even August for George St. Pierre. He likes to, you know, take a lot of time off preparing for his big fight. So, you know, what can you do? I just don't think it's that big a deal, and it's not going to go away, unfortunately.
Well, and I think BJ is going to let this affect him too much going into his fight with Kenny Florian. It's already started because he made a claim on his own website, on his own radio show at bjpenn.com, that Florian was the one that he's surprised that Florian is going to be training with George for their upcoming bout that they're in negotiations to set up. He said he's surprised to see that he's training with him since Kenny was the one that told him that tipped him off about George allegedly greasing in past fights. And Florian almost immediately issued a statement saying that that's absolutely not the case, and he absolutely did not do that, only talked to BJ in passing. And so it's more of a case of this is going to be on – he needs to get this whole situation out of his mind, get out of his mind any type of thoughts of a rematch, because I'm sorry, if they fight again, if they want to push for a third fight in this series, George St. Pierre will destroy BJ Penn in round number three. I mean, or not round number three of the fight, but in fight number three. It's just – I think it'll be over even quicker than it was after four rounds of a beating. I mean – BJ's not going to be allowed to have his corner throw in the towel because he'll be stopped. He will be stopped for the first time in his career if he fights George St. Pierre again. I'm that convinced after the performance GSP put on that night. And if he lets this stay on his mind and he doesn't get past it, I mean, he's going to get beat by Kenny Florian too. It's just going to happen if he's distracted that much.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope this is just kind of, you know, BJ trying to play some mind games with Kenny Florian. I think that's what Kenny thinks it is. That's not going to work with Kenny Florian. He's too smart and mature of a fighter. I mean, he's 32 years old. He's older than BJ. You know, he's, I guess, still relatively new to the sport, but he was a smart, you know, middle to late 20s guy on The Ultimate Fighter when he first really kind of came into MMA full-time. And, yeah, BJ... I hope that it's just mind games by BJ, because if it's not, if he's not fully focused on Kenny Florian, Kenny Florian's going to stop BJ Penn. Kenny Florian has very good wrestling, not George St. Pierre level wrestling, but good enough to take BJ Penn down. He's got, you know, a very active top game, you know, sharp elbows. He's got great stand-up. I mean, he has everything. He's a complete mixed martial artist who just doesn't quite have the natural athletic abilities as a George St. Pierre and the natural strength. But short of that, he's got all the tools. And if BJ Penn doesn't, you know, get his head out of his ass on this situation, he's going to lose again. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't lose to Kenny Florian, but if all things are equal, if they both go in with their heads on straight, focused on the fight, you know, BJ Penn would obviously still be the favorite in that fight.
No, I definitely agree with you on that. And if he's clear-headed, I mean, if he gets into his head that he can be a dominant 155er, I mean, he can be the champion for a long time. I mean, he's a great fighter, and when he's at 155, he's in his best shape, and he's at his best against guys that are his size. I mean, and he's got it in his head that he wants to fight guys that are much bigger and try to prove himself against those larger guys, but you know what? What we've seen when he's fought in the lightweight division, I mean, just how dominant he can be. I mean, that fight against Sean Sherk, I mean, no one has dominated Sherk like BJ Penn did. And the fight against Joe Stevenson, I mean, just absolutely brutalizing Stevenson. It's BJ at 155 is a perfect fit. And if his head's on straight, he can be a champion for a long time if he so chooses, if he wants to be. But, I mean, if he lets things like this distract him and makes excuses for why he lost instead of you know, looking inward and looking at why he lost to him, looking at what he did to lose the fight as opposed to what someone else did to cheat to beat him. I mean, he can be a dominant fighter if he so chooses.
He's got to do it in his weight class, though.
Exactly.
That's the only option. Yeah, he needs to stop messing around thinking he can jump up. I mean, the game is different now than it was his first go-around in the UFC, where it was kind of, you know, two or three really good fighters in each division, but after that there was a drop-off. So if you can beat those other two fighters, then what else is there for you? Well, there's a lot of fights for him in 155, a lot of really, really good fights. There's some fantastic fighters there, and he's got six or seven, you know, possible title offenses if he can keep making them over some really, really good opponents that will cement his legacy as the top lightweight of all time. And why? What's wrong with that? He's naturally not that big of a guy, so it's not like people are going to say, wow, he's the greatest fighter of all time because he's this guy that can go up and defeat guys 40 pounds heavier than him. No, you can't do that. Everybody is so much better today than they were even, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, to the point that just being the best in your division and being dominant in your division is a fantastic feat in and of itself, and that's what he needs to focus on.
Absolutely. Moving along past that story, hopefully we can make it not a common theme, and hopefully we can get past this whole situation and it can be cleared up, and we can stop the attempted tarnishing of the GSP legacy that is being built right now, and BJ can move on to build his legacy in 155, because that's what needs to happen. But moving on to the really, really good news of the week, Strikeforce has acquired some of the limited assets from Pro Elite, including 42 fighter contracts, not all of which have been revealed. And they have inked a deal with Showtime to air up to 16 fights per year in a multi-year deal. And it's also been confirmed that they do have a CBS deal in place. There are no details out on that, but there is a contract in place. According to Strikeforce's CEO, Scott Coker, who was interviewed on CBSSports.com, saying, there's a confidentiality in all the contracts we signed, so I can't tell you the details, but I can tell you that there's a CBS contract in place. So Strikeforce picks up where Elite XC left off. They've already got a plethora of talent under the Strikeforce banner, bringing in a lot of the bigger-name fighters, if you can call them that, but some of the more skilled fighters from the Elite XC brand into the Strikeforce brand for Showtime and CBS. This is just a win-win for MMA fans everywhere. I mean, we're going to have a viable number two promotion. Strikeforce has been running their business model and running their shows much better than Pro Elite ever did with Elite XC. They're not burning the money that Elite XC was. They've got many more fighters on tap that they can make really solid matchups on, and it's going to start with the first show on Showtime for Strikeforce on April 11th. It's going to be headlined by a catchweight bout at 179 pounds between Frank Shamrock and Nick Diaz. Also on the card will be a fight between Scott Smith and Benji Radich, and Josh Thompson is going to be on this card as well. They're looking at possibly trying to get together the much talked about and much hyped confrontation between Chris Cyborg and Gina Carano for the April 11th event as well. Really, this is just great news for everyone involved. The Elite XC fighters that were stuck under those contracts and have been in limbo and unable to really go out and do anything have a chance now to get in with Strikeforce and get fighting again. And so for the fighters, it's a win. They've got more matchups with Strikeforce than they would have with Elite XC. I mean, there's just a lot of good stuff coming out of this deal, and it's really, really exciting, and I really can't wait for that April 11th show.
Yeah, this was fantastic news. And the best part about it to me was that they apparently purchased all this for $3 million, which I think Dana White carries around in his money clip in his back pocket. So the fact that to know that Dana White could have said, well, I'll give you $4 million, and all of a sudden the UFC has these fighters under contract and, you know, has a deal with Showtime all of a sudden and a deal with CBS. I was glad to see it go to a company like Strikeforce that didn't have to spend everything they had to get all of this, and it's going to return to them tenfold in what they're able to do with all the things that are coming out of this deal. Strikeforce is a well-run company that's been around for a while in the fight-promoting game. Scott Coker, the CEO, knows what he's doing. He's an actual MMA fight promoter, not a boxing leech who's trying to just, you know, make a dime off of what Dana White and the Fertittas have spent years building up. And the best thing for Strikeforce is the UFC respects them. Dana White has come out publicly and said, I respect what they do. I don't have any issues with them. And, you know, Strikeforce feels the same way about the UFC, and they're content kind of being a number two. I think the biggest mistake that, you know, Affliction and Elite FC would make is thinking that they can overtake UFC as the number one MMA promotion. It's not going to happen. The war's over, guys. You might as well stop trying. And you already have the stable of fighters under the Strikeforce banner of, you know, Frank Shamrock and Kung Lee in the middleweight division, and guys like Josh Thompson and Gilbert Melendez in the lightweight division. And all of a sudden you add, you know, Scott Smith and Robbie Lawler and Benji Raddick and Nick Diaz and Jake Shields and KJ Nunes. And all of a sudden there's, you know, some viable divisions in this promotion. I can't wait for that first event. It's going to be great. I love the trash talking going on between Frank Shamrock and Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz is one of my favorite fighters in the world, so I'll be pulling for him. But yeah, I mean, it just seems like nothing but good is going to come out of this. It's going to give fighters somewhere else to go, which is nice, especially with UFC constantly in cut mode. Anytime you lose one or two fights for them, which is understandable, they can't really afford to keep fighters who aren't, you know, going to make them money. But it's nice to know that there's a viable second promotion out there now, one that I can actually put my faith in that's going to be around longer than a couple of events.
Well, and it's going to be a home for fighters, like you said, that are getting released, but it's going to be a place where they can try to put a couple of wins together in that organization to get themselves back to the UFC at some point if they so desire, because they're going to have more exposure getting on Strikeforce than they would just winning a couple on some other local promotions or regional promotions, whatever they get into. I think I think Affliction is definitely going to be hurt the most by this, because they've really only got one more marketable fight. They've got Fedor, Josh Barnett, and after that, I don't know what they've got that they can attempt to put a pay-per-view on. And, you know, if they don't have long-term contracts locked up with a lot of people, some of their guys, I mean, Babalu is the Strikeforce light heavyweight champion, so he's already along with Strikeforce, so if he's going to be fighting for their CBS or Showtime shows, he's not going to be available for another Affliction pay-per-view in there as well. I mean, I think Strikeforce is going to be able to pull him in for more of their events with for Affliction, and same with many of the other fighters. I mean, they're going to get more chances to fight with Strikes than they would Affliction, so why show any loyalty to Affliction in that sense? I mean, they might get obviously they'll get a bigger payday for that pay-per-view, but at the same time, they've got a situation now with Strikeforce where, like you said, we have confidence that they're going to be around for more than just a couple of events. I mean, this isn't going to be a situation where Dana White comes out and calls their demise 6 months from now, because, like you said already, he's come out before and said he respects what Strikeforce does and he has no problem with what Strikeforce is doing. And even with this influx of talent that they're going to have now, they're not going to have these delusions that they're going to be the UFC, that they're going to be the number one promotion. I mean, they're going to have a lot of exposure with the CBS shows. They're going to have decent exposure with the Showtime shows. But at the same time, UFC is still going to be the top dog. UFC is still going to bring in the pay-per-view dollars. UFC is still going to bring in the live event dollars. UFC is still going to have the top fighters in the world for the most part. It's unfortunate that they don't have all of them. You can't win every fight. But with this here, to have a promotion like Strikeforce in the spot to put shows on Showtime and to put shows on CBS, I mean, it's really going to be an exciting 2009 because we're going to get many fights that maybe we weren't thinking we would be able to see. The only disappointing thing is I would have liked to see Jake Shields get a shot at the UFC welterweight division because he's constantly talked about how he wants to face the top guys in the welterweight division. And really, without being able to see him against the Josh Koscheck's or the GSPs, any of them in the top of the welterweight division, the Thiago Alves, the John Fitches, if he's not in there against that top competition, it's still kind of a question mark as to how good he can be.
Well, but also look at what the UFC, you know, has been doing lately, and they keep cutting fighters who lose like two fights in a row. So who knows? Maybe one of those fighters that we consider the top of the cream of the crop in the UFC right now, in a year from now, you know, might be getting their walking papers, and all of a sudden we will get to see Jake Shields face some top competition. What kind of sucks for him is that the only other top of the line fighter in Strikeforce now at 170 will be Nick Diaz, who is his training partner, and you know we're never going to see a fight between the two of them. So that's going to be they have two very marketable, high quality fighters there in Nick Diaz and Jake Shields in that division. The tough thing is going to be finding guys to fight them. Apparently, Scott Coker has some connections with K1 and has been in talks to bring over Shinya Aoki and Melvin Manhoff when they can. So that would Shinya Aoki can fight both Jake Shields and Nick Diaz. He can fight in the 155 and give some great fights there. So that would be a lot of fun to see. It's just going to be the struggle is to find more fighters to put a division around that you can have, more than one fight, so you don't run into the affliction problem where you kind of run out of options after one or two shows. I don't think that'll be the case in some of the other divisions, especially the middleweight division. They have a fantastic middleweight division shaping up. And, you know, there's always new fighters coming up, new and exciting ones. There's always fighters looking for new places to work. And whenever affliction, I think the doomsday doc, the clock is ticking down now. They're going to go under at some point. They can't keep putting on these giant pay-per-views in big-time arenas and losing, you know, millions and millions of dollars on each show. That's not going to work much longer. Your investors are going to get tired of losing their money and not really see a point where it's going to get any better. So eventually Oscar De La Hoya is going to pull out and Donald Trump's going to pull out, and then you're not going to be left with anything else. So those fighters are going to need a home to go to, and Strikeforce will be a decent option for that. I know Scott Coker has said, you know, we've been lenient kind of in the past with our fighter contracts, letting them go fight elsewhere because of inactivity. You know, if they don't put on a show for a little while, they kind of let the fighters go and find some work. But he says, you know, we're gonna be plenty busy now that they'll have, you know, fights here consistently, so they won't need to go anywhere else. So the fighters under their banner are going to stay under their banner, and hopefully they'll have a nice long-term home there.
Absolutely. It's certainly going to be exciting to see what they can do and what they can produce as far as production values in their show on Showtime and if they get or once they go to CBS as well and hopefully improve on what Elite XC was really unable to do. And that's put on a really good MMA show for a network audience because they really kind of set the sport back on the networks with their first few shows. So hopefully they'll be able to make a change on that. Last thing I wanted to touch on, if you're lacking in MMA action this weekend and you're not liking the fact that it's the first weekend in about 5 weeks, 6 weeks that hasn't had any MMA, fear not. The Extreme Cage Fighting Federation has their Rumble in Racetown with a live online video stream. It's a $9.95 pay-per-view, but it will be well worth your dollars as part of the proceeds will be going to injured UFC fighter Corey Hill, who you all remember as breaking his leg at last December's Fight Night 16, Fight for the Troops event, and he's going to be out for 12 to 18 months. So part of the proceeds from that $9.95 going to Corey Hill to help him and his family as he's unable to do what he does because of that freak injury. And I mean, the event's got some familiar UFC names. Frank Trigg is on the show, Terry Martin, Jesse Taylor, Jeremy May, and Blake Bowman, as well as former All-Pro Tampa Bay Buccaneer defensive end Marcus Jones fighting on this card. So it should be, a good night of mixed martial arts action. For $10, it could be more expensive and worse things to spend your Saturday night doing. So if you get a chance to do that, that starts at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, and that one's live from Daytona Beach, Florida. So that'll be worth checking out. Matt, once again, thank you for joining me on the audio tonight. We'll hopefully make this a regular deal. And thank you all for listening tonight. Any final thoughts here, Matt, on our two topics of the night and going forward to next week's UFC 95?
Well, yeah, just real quick to anybody listening, just keep an eye out this weekend. We'll have the return of the Writers Roundtable on MMA Torch. We took a little hiatus with all the flurry of activity going on, but we got it going back again this week. And obviously stay tuned next week, UFC 95 coming on Saturday. So everybody stay tuned to the Torch as we got coverage going all week long, and we'll have the prediction of betting contest as usual. So look out for that and get your picks in. And Jamie, I will talk to you next week for the preview show.
Absolutely. Thanks again.